Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Glad to be here, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. Okay, it is Sunday, 6:40 p.m., November 7, 2004. We're not quite a week away from the debacle that was this last week's election. And I sense a lot of you are still depressed, a lot of you are still down, a lot of you are still unsure of what really happened. And I have this to say. Snap out of it. Jesus Christ Almighty, what were you expecting? Everybody there out there up there fucking saying that Kerry was going to win in a landslide? What are you, fucking blind? Are you fucking stupid? Can you not see that? Does nobody fucking listen to me? Am I shouting here into the wind? This fucking election was a slap in the face to you. You got to realize that you can't just go out and write a few letters and do a few things and you're automatically going to get it. It doesn't fucking work that way. It doesn't work that way. You got to fight hard, and you got to fight hard for years and years. Get up off your ass. Don't give up. Do something. Don't stop fighting. It doesn't end. The fighting never ends. The price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And we've let it slip. For 30 years, they have been kicking our asses. And part of the reason that they've been kicking our asses is because we don't know how to fight. We've had it too easy for too long. Now maybe you fucking understand what we're dealing with here. And I've got people sitting here telling, oh, we just got to change the message. We just got to do... No. Look, listen. Stop it and listen. Do you think the fucking New Deal came into existence overnight? Do you think we got everything we got by being nice and playing nice? Or even playing by the rules all the time? We won the New Deal because there were people for 30 years before that going out in the streets with baseball bats and bashing heads in. That's what it took back then. I don't want it to come down to that, and I've been trying to fight, and others have been trying to fight so that it doesn't come down to that. But you know, it may wind up coming down to that. And if you're not willing to do that, then you better deal with the situation at hand. And if you're a young person especially, you better deal with the real situation, because if you're an 18 or 19 or 20-year-old in the United States right now, the odds are that your next election is going to be by absentee ballot from the streets of Tehran or Baghdad or Damascus, wherever the hell they want to go. Because you know what? As Bush says, he's got the political capital now, and he's going to spend it. And that means your lives. That's exactly what he means. And if you don't think it was fucking serious before, you better wake your ass up right now. All you people who think you're conservative by supporting him, you fucking morons. You stupid fucking morons. P.T. Barnum had a word for you, sucker. Especially if you're a poor working slob like me. Do you think your life is going to get any better? Did you do what I told you about your tax forms? Were you paying any more or less taxes in 2004 than you were paying in 2000? Are you going to be paying any more or less taxes in 2008? Your taxes aren't going to go down. In fact, everything else is going up. Look at the gas prices. They've gone through the roof. And I'm sick and tired of this little penny-ante stuff. And they had a thing on JuanCole.com that I posted on my board. And I posted it on Daily Kos and a couple other things. And Juan Cole had this to say. A lot of Democrats would like to see gay marriage or at least civil gay unions passed into law. This is a matter of equity, since gay partners can't even get into a hospital to see an ill partner because hospitals limit visits to close family. This issue scares the bejesus out of the red states. But if Democrats were sly, there's a way out. The Baptist Southern presidential candidate should start a campaign to get the damn federal government out of the marriage business. It has to be framed that way. Marriage should be a faith-based institution, and we should turn it over to the churches. If someone doesn't want to be married at a church, then the federal government can offer them a legal civil contract. It's a better name for it than civil union. That's not a marriage, and the candidate could solemnly observe that they are taking their salvation in their own hands if they go that route. But that is their business. But marriage is sacred, and the churches should be in charge of it. If you succeeded in getting the federal government out of the marriage business, then the whole issue would collapse on Republicans. You appeal to populist sentiments against the feds and long Baptist tradition of support for the U.S. First Amendment enshrining separation of church and state. I told this to Mr. Cole. I said this on Kos, and I'll tell it to you now. This is just plain fucking wrong. Federal interference is fine with these morons as long as it benefits them. If the federal government would pass a law reinstituting slavery, they'd be all for it. They all wanted to pass laws to put in their state constitutions, in other words, making it state law and a law to ban gay marriages. They want the power of the government on their side. The South voted for Democrats for years because they were the party of segregation. And as soon as the Democrats in the 60s started supporting civil rights for blacks, they jumped ship to the Republicans. What would Lincoln have thought about that? The Republican Party, which was formed to oppose slavery, waving the Confederate flag. It doesn't matter if you're talking about fags, if you're talking about the brothers, Yankees, liberals, spicks, wops, chinks, it doesn't matter. To these people, it doesn't matter. If you're not a white Southerner, you might as well not even exist as far as they're concerned. You remember what Beachon said? Out here in flyover country where the real people live, nobody's buying Kerry's BS. That's as plain as it is. They are the real people as they see it, and we're not. And you think you're going to convince them otherwise? Do you think they're going to buy any sort of bullshit from the Democratic Party along those lines? Or you think they're going to buy any of that? They're not. These are fanatics. These are cult members. You have to perform a mass intervention on them somehow. And that mass intervention may be coming up in a form that they may not like. Let me tell you something. Forget the stupid games. Forget the fucking memes. Forget the fucking thing. Talking about framing and all that shit. It's not going to work with these people. It's not going to work with these people. They're fanatics. The only way you can take away from these people is by convincing the people who aren't voting yet and who aren't paying attention that this is not a war on terror. This is a war on freedom. and they're the ones who are launching it. They start wars to scare people into voting for them. They're lax on terrorism because they know that the terrorists scare people into voting for them. There's always going to be a core group of people in the Republican Party that are going to vote for Republicans regardless of who they have in there. They could run a goat for office and they'd vote for him, so long as they believe that the goat was for God. You people need to wake up to these realities. And there's plenty of evidence that they cheated on the vote anyway. Well, I'm pretty sure that they did. We'll never be able to prove it because nobody's going to listen to us. The idea that people who live in New York are less real than the people who live in Texas is ridiculous. But you know what? They believe it. They're the only real people in the world. We don't even exist. They'd kill us if they had the chance. Don't think I'm kidding. They would. They'd put a gun to our heads and blow our brains out if they had given the chance. The Republicans know they can say or do anything and get away with it because those people will believe anything that they're told. Suckers. It's their children going off and fighting and dying in Iraq. It's them and their children who are going to pay the economic price for their policies, especially down here in the South. There was an article in Creative Loafing this week by John Sugg talking about how the South is screwing itself with the way it runs businesses. That's what I'm talking about, people. It's time to get serious. If you don't think it's serious now, wait until we're fighting in Tehran or in Damascus. The foreign countries have already started pulling money out of this country, investment money. Money that we need. Money that makes a big difference here because they think we're all fucking nuts. We're not all nuts. We have two choices. And all of it depends upon how nasty these people decide they're going to be. If they were real fascists, then we have to wait until a military force of some kind takes them out, and we have to be ready to come in with a government of our own, if they're really that bad, if they decide to have a Kristallnacht of their own. But if there's still enough people who care about the democratic process, about the idea of self-rule, about the idea that people have a right to vote and to participate, then all we can do is try to convince the people who haven't voted yet. Start right now registering people to vote. Don't wait until the last minute. Start right now. If you're going to frame a message, frame it to them. Don't frame it to the cultists. They're a lost cause. The people who sit there waving Confederate flags over the bridges demanding a return to the Confederacy, they're lost causes. They're hopelessly insane. Even if they got what they wanted, they wouldn't understand it. Liberalism did more for the South than anything else. It brought them electricity. It helped bring them good-paying jobs. But you know what? They still turned their back on it because they had the idea that working people shouldn't work together. And they have the idea that black people are still a mongrel race. Not even human. They don't like anybody from a state other than where they live in. I've seen, you know, Southern kindness and politeness. It's not really politeness. It's a phony politeness. They think they're better than you are. They're a bunch of racist scum, homophobic, who don't care if they don't have a job or if their sons and daughters are going off to fight a war based on a lie. So long as the fags can't get married, they're happy. That's what they voted for. 11 states had anti-gay marriage stuff on the ballot, and they all passed by large margins. And it was passed by these people. Snap out of it. Wake up. Stop listening to this old hippie shit. And get with the real world. Get with us in this century. You people don't fucking understand what we're facing here. I went yesterday to go to the supermarket. I wanted to get some Italian sausage and green peppers for myself. And I wanted to get something to eat for my wife, too. I didn't know what I wanted, but there's a little Chinese place in the strip mall where the supermarket is. And I went there, and they were busy, as they always are, on Saturday. And I was watching the lady who took my order go in the back of the kitchen there. You can see back into the kitchen. It's a very nice, it's a very little place. It's they've got a few tables, but it's really more of a takeout place than it is a sit-down restaurant. And I saw her rolling the dumplings there by hand. They do everything fresh there, which is one of the reasons why I go there when I can. I always support these local places, you know, like the Avondale Pizza Cafe, which is a nice little local pizza joint. You know, run by a good bunch of kids, very polite, hardworking guys and girls. And I always support these local places. And I was wondering, you know, well, first off, I was glad to see that they're working so hard on a Saturday. You know, I mean, these people are obviously hardworking. I don't know what their politics are. That's not important to me. But I keep thinking, what if some guy, some big corporation decides he wants to buy up all these little places? Or what if some corporation decides to open up their own little place and sell everything for a lot cheaper, and it's nowhere near as good because they don't give a shit about the quality? You've eaten in fast food joints. Do they give a shit about quality? Not really. You know, and the quality has gone down. You know, I remember when I was younger and I used to go to the McDonald's and the Wendy's and stuff like that, that the stuff was a lot better than it is now. I don't eat there anymore. I don't go there. And I'm not perfect about it. Every now and then I'll run into Checkers because I like the Swiss mushroom burgers. And I don't know what kind of sauce. If I could make that myself, I would make that stuff myself that they use for the mushrooms. But I like those. But generally, when I go out, when I'm getting something to eat like that, I'm going to go to a local place. And I urge all of you, too. I also urge all of you to boycott Walmart for the very same reason. These people destroy neighborhoods. They don't build them. The local places, the places that are run by people who live in a neighborhood and who care about the quality of the stuff that they put out more than they care about their profit margin, although obviously they want to have a profit margin so they can survive and pay their bills and send their kids to college. They're the ones that are going to get hurt by Bush's policies. I don't know whether they voted for Mr. Bush or not, but eventually they're going to get hurt by them. Because the Bush people talk about freedom and independence, but they don't really believe in all that. In their world, the freedom and independence means the people with the money get to do whatever the hell that they want, and the law doesn't apply to them. Worst case scenario is that the rest of the country, the rest of the world just turns their back on this country. And says, you know what, you want to play your own games, fuck you, we'll fight you. And it could come to war, maybe, I don't know. They could deal with us economically, they could take us out without firing a shot. I guarantee it. Like I said, investors are already pulling their money out. Who's going to get hurt at first? People like the ones that work in that restaurant, people like me, people like my wife. You know, Bush is already talking about getting rid of disability. Did you know that, honey? My wife is laying there. We're hoping she gets that because, you know, my wife can't work right now. She's physically incapable of working. If she could work, that would be great because she could work a part-time job and make just enough money to pay the rent so that I could actually put some money away instead of having it all pretty much go away to pay for food and bills and rent. Because that's what happens. I make $13 an hour, which isn't too bad, but it's nowhere near what we need to live on. We're behind on the rent and only by the grace of our landlord, who works 50 to 60 hours a week on his own, is that we get to stay here and that we have a roof over our head and we're not in a homeless shelter. It shouldn't be that way. My parents and your parents, they were all able to get a job, work 40 hours a week and support themselves and have enough money to get a house. My dad made $6.50 an hour throughout the 60s. On that one salary, he could not only support a family of five, but he can go out They saved enough money to go out and buy a house in Florida where we moved in the 70s. Can anybody do that now on that kind of salary and hour? No, I can't do that making twice what he was making, which is what I make. And all the people who work at that place, and the people where I work, and the people who work at the Avondale Pizza Place, they're all the ones that are going to get hurt by the policies of this administration. But they don't care, because they don't care about us. As far as they're concerned, we don't exist. They know they've got the red state people locked in, enough of them anyway. They don't have all of them. My roommate was trying to make the case. Well, they still got 44% of the vote in North Carolina. You know what? That's not fucking enough. You're not going to get 51% of the vote. And quite frankly, I don't really want to get the racist, homophobe vote. I would just rather outvote them. Get people who say, you're wrong, and we don't want you in power. A lot more people voted this time than last time, but there's still a lot of people who didn't vote. More people voted for George Bush this year than voted last time, but more people voted against him, too. We're getting out the numbers. We had a lot more people vote this time than last time, but they're getting more numbers because there's a lot of them, too. But there's still a lot more people who don't vote. That's more than half the country still did not participate. I mean, we know we're going to have to get numbers that are going to overcome all the cheating that they were going to do. And I knew Ohio and Florida were going to be the ones where they cheated at, and which, of course, turned out to be. But, you know, I can't prove it, so there's no point in even fighting it. The media is not going to listen to it. So all you people who are out there supporting Kerry, going, oh, rah, 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 we're going to win, and just assuming that if he won, everything would turn up flowers and roses, you know what? Snap out of it. If you're going to sulk and be depressed for a couple of weeks or so, maybe at the most, and then come fighting back. The fight never ends. Do you understand that? The fight never ends because these people have money, and they know how to get power, and they know how to bring people down. Ignorance of stupidity is like the force of gravity. No matter how hard you try to get up, it's always trying to push you down. And it requires constant fighting. Constant fighting. People perish for lack of knowledge, my wife says. It's a biblical quote, apparently. Either way, wake up. And with that, let's take a little break. Let's hear from our friends at BuzzFlash.com. And I'm going to play some hippie shit of my own. I really don't like a lot of the stuff out of the 60s. Not that I thought it was bad or anything like that, but it's just outdated. But here's something that you young people of me have never heard before. It's Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie, and it's about the draft. And I figure since a bunch of you are due to get drafted in the next few years, it might give you some ideas of what to expect. So, here's the Buzz Flash people, here's Arlo Guthrie, and Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. BuzzFlash readers keep writing us emails asking if the Bush cartel stole the election. Our answer is, we don't know. But they could have if they wanted to. Why? Because of electronic voting and voter suppression. A band of patriots have exposed the electronic voting machines, manufactured by three U.S. companies, as both extremely vulnerable to hacking and having their vote results rigged. The machines are also manufactured by companies with strong Republican ties. In fact, Wally O'Dell, the CEO of Diebold, which is headquartered in Ohio, penned a letter earlier this year pledging his commitment to, quote, helping Ohio deliver its electoral votes to the president. Just what exactly did Wally mean? Well, we'll give you one guess, and it has to do with a quote supposedly from Stalin. Those who vote decide nothing. Those who count the votes decide everything. There is no way of knowing whether the Diebold machines and other electronic voting machines were rigged or not. You see, their counting software is patented. Without considering alternatives, we privatized our vote counting. There are other electronic voting systems. India's 380 million voters use their own electronic voting machines in recent elections. Their machines are inexpensive, transparent, and tamper-proof, because Indians appear to enjoy corruption-free voting. It's too bad Republicans don't. The fact remains that U.S. electronic voting machines are eminently capable of being rigged. Coincidentally, the Bush cartel will do anything to steal an election. You connect the not-so-distant dots. But that brings us to our BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week, Ken Blackwell, Ohio's Secretary of State, and the man in charge of ensuring the voting in his state is transparent, tamper-proof, and corruption-free. Blackwell was the Bush cartel's male version of Florida's Catherine Cruella DeVille Harris. So when Rove strategized how to suppress, and perhaps also steal, the vote, Blackwell, a Clarence Thomas wannabe, said, "Yes, sir, Mr. Carl, I want to be your token black right-winger, just like Clarence. How can I help you suppress black and Democratic voters? Then will you make sure I get elected the next governor of Ohio? Please, Mr. Carl, please?" So an office holder who is supposed to help Americans vote spent his time over the last 2 years implementing roadblocks to voters, particularly new registrants. Most people know their Secretary of State because he's the guy or woman whose name appears on their driver's license. But most Ohioans got to know Ken Blackwell because he was the one doing everything possible to stop everyone but Republicans from voting. The guy even tried to refuse any voter registration card that wasn't printed on 80-pound weight paper. That is, until internet-savvy Democrats publicized it enough to make him retract his ridiculous requirement. And then Blackwell even got involved with advocating for the passage of the draconian anti-gay referendum in Ohio, speaking out at churches about the scourge of gay relationships. He saw nothing wrong with the Secretary of State involving himself with the ballot issue over which he was responsible for counting the results. Stalin would be proud of Ken Blackwell. So did the Bushies steal an election again? You don't need specific proof. All you need to know is that they, through the Bush cartel Secretary of States in Florida and Ohio, counted the votes. Those who count the votes decide everything. The voters be damned. Ken Blackwell, mission accomplished. You did everything you could do to disenfranchise voters while pretending to represent them. You are the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
This song's called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Now it all started two Thanksgivings ago, it was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant, she lives in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower with her husband Ray and Foch as a dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving, and we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before, and with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one. Till we came to a side road, and off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff, and at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage, and we decided that one big pile's better than two little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." After speaking to Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obie could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, "Obie, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on." He said, "Shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car." And that's what we did, and sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, "scene of the crime," unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened. Here they got three stop signs, two police officers and one police car, but when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire, track, footprints, dog smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obie said he was gonna put us in the cell. Said, "Kid, I'm gonna put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt." And I said, "Obie, I can understand you want my wallet, so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for?" And it said, "Kid, we don't want any hangings." I said, "Obie, did you think I was gonna hang myself for littering?" Obie said he was making sure, and friends, Obie was, because he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, and have an escape. Obie was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by and with a few nasty words to Obie on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obie came in with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one. Sat down. Man came in, said, "All rise." We all stood up, and Obie stood up with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures. And the judge walked in, sat down with the CNI dog, and he sat down. We sat down. hope he looked at the CNI dog. Then the 27-8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the CNI dog. And then the 27-8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, cause Obie came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice, and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't gonna look at the 27-8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. Came to talk about the draft. You got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down to get my physical examination one day, and I walked in, I sat down, got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Cause I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like that. I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York, and I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, shrink, I want to kill. And I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. Kill, kill, kill! And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill, kill! And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill, kill! And the sergeant came over, pinned a medal on me, set me down the hall, said, you're our boy. Didn't feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there. And they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they wasn't leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I when finally came to see the very last man, I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, what do you want? He said, kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested? And I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacre, with full orchestration and five-part harmony and stuff like that, and then all the phenomena stopped me right there and said, kid, did you ever go to court? I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and stopped me right there and said, kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid! And I walked over to the bench there, and there's his Group W, is where they put you. If you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime, and there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench. There's mother rapers, father stabbers. Father rapers sitting right there on the bench next to me, and one, it was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench, and the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things, and he sat down next to me and said, kid, what'd you get? Said, I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage. said, what were you arrested for, kid? And I said, littering. And they all moved away from me on the bench there to carry eyeball and all kinds of mean, nasty things. Till I said, and creating a nuisance. And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we was talking about on the bench. And everything was fine, we were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things until the sergeant came over. Had some paper in his hand, held it up and said, kids, this piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 sentences, 58 words. We want to know details of the crime, time, crime, and else kind of thing. You got 17, 20 about the crime. Want to know the rest of the officer's name, and else kind of thing. You got to say, and talk for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. I filled out the massacre with the four-part harmony and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine. And I put down a pencil and I turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words. Kid, you rehabilitated yourself. I went over to the sergeant and said, sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I'm sitting here on a bench. I mean, I'm sitting here on the Group W bench. Because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug. He looked at me and said, kid, we don't like your kind. And we're going to send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folders, a study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is because you may know somebody in a similar situation. Or you may be in a similar situation. And if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do, is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in and say, shrink, you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant, and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony, they think they're both faggots and they won't take either of them. And if three people do it, can you imagine three people walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out? They may think it's an organization. And can you imagine 50 people a day? I said 50 people a day walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out. And friends, they may think it's a movement. And that's what it is, the Alice's Restaurant Anti-Massacre Movement. And all you gotta do to join is to sing it the next time it comes around on the guitar with feeling. So we'll wait till it comes around on the guitar here. Sing it when it does. Here it comes. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
That was horrible.
Want to end war and stuff, you gotta sing loud. You could
put a lot. I've been singing the song now for 25 minutes. I could sing it for another 25 minutes. I'm not proud. Or tired. So we'll wait till it comes around again. And this time with four-part harmony and feeling. We're just waiting for it to come around is what we're doing. Anything you want at Alice's restaurant, excepting Alice. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. So walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Da 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 da. At Alice's restaurant.
Arlo Guthrie, Alice's Restaurant, the classic 60s anti-draft song. And I hope none of you out there get to experience the draft firsthand. I don't know what's going to happen, but as I speak, they're planning on the massive attack on the city of Fallujah. And if it goes as I think it's going to go, then the entire country may decide to rise up against us. I wonder what would happen if we got kicked out of Iraq, because you know that is a possibility. We talked to, if you remember a few episodes ago, we talked to Professor Juan Cole, who I yelled at a little bit, but that's okay. You know, I still agree with him mostly what he says, but he says that there's every possibility that we can get kicked out of Iraq. In fact, it's like a 50-50 thing, because it all depends on how we act over the course of the next few days or so, and what we do in Fallujah or what we choose not to do in Fallujah. But if the entire country rises up against us, there's really not a whole hell of a lot we can do. I mean, we don't want to have a situation where we have 10 times as many troops in there as we have now. That would require a serious draft, and it would take many, many years. So, you know, it's going to be a long slog in there, despite what the things say. But you know, people still voted for the guy anyway, despite all the disasters. You know, they say it's because of the way he frames shit, and I think it's just because the people who vote for him are a bunch of ignorant cocksuckers. But that's another story. Anyway, welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not so humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And, of course, I always urge everyone to write me email or write a comment on the board. I like to have a nice, lively discussion on the board, even the trolls that I got come in. Well, they're not really trolls because they're kind of regulars. And I tolerate them because, well, I'm too lazy to cut them all off yet. I mentioned in the in my little screed last time about an article in Creative Loafing newspaper. And a couple of things I want to bring up. First of all, this article in the Financial Times about how the dollar, U.S. dollar is expected to fall because China is starting to sell off their assets here. It says the dollar could slide still further in spite of hitting an all-time low against the euro last week in the wake of George W. Bush's re-election. The dollar sell-off has resumed amid fears among traders that Mr. Bush's victory will bring four more years of widening U.S. budget and current account deficits, heightened geopolitical risks, and a policy of benign neglect on the dollar. And we might get to the point where the most known and most trusted currency in the world is not the U.S. dollar, but the euro. It might even get to that point, because these people are very irresponsible with their financial debts, because they basically want it all for themselves, and the only thing that they're really, really good at is grabbing power and sucking money out of people. And they have no sense of responsibility, no sense of concern above and beyond how much do I get. Show me the money. And the article I mentioned with John Sugg in Creative Loafing was about how the South is always looking backwards, and we're too tied up in, you know, the past to think about the future. And they went out, he and the photographer went out on a trip around the South. Well, he lives down here. You know, he's been living down here for a long time. So he's a native Southerner. Although Atlantans are a little bit different. We're a little bit more cosmopolitan, although Atlanta is a pretty backwards friggin' city. Just one look at our public transportation system ought to tell you that. I mean, we got this really ignorant attitude about public transportation. If you listen to the sons of bitches on the radio, especially Neil Bortz, they say, oh, public transportation's got to make a profit. No, it doesn't have to make a profit. It's not supposed to make a profit. It's there so that you spend less money on road construction, that you have less air pollution, that it makes it easier for people to get back and forth to work, that nobody has to have a car. I don't have a problem having a car. I like having a car because I can go shopping and stuff. But, you know, it's better to have a good public transportation system, and you don't want, and they don't really want to have that. And if you're not going to take it seriously, then shut it down, as far as I'm concerned. It would take me over an hour and a half to get to work by bus, as opposed to like 15 minutes by car, because I live right off the highway here, and where I work is right off the highway. It's a fairly quick drive, assuming there's no traffic. Some days there's a traffic jam, and I go around the back streets. But by bus, it takes an hour and a half. If it took me a half an hour or 45 minutes, I'd take the bus. You know, it would make more sense to me because I'd rather do that. Risk wear and tear in the car, you know. But anyway, when you get out in the open country out here, out away from the city, that's where you find the real red staters, the real Bush supporters. And he was talking about the debt and, you know, as I mentioned in that Financial Times articles, and he was asking people about, you know, stuff like that. And he said he found only a handful of people out of the 100, this is quoting the article we interviewed, that understood that the trillions of dollars of deficit swamping America are bad for us. No one, especially no one they talked to, was aware that debt is a commodity. And who owns much of the debt that Mr. Bush has run up? Shrewd investors such as the blood-drenched communist bastards who enthrall more than a billion people in China. They're every bit as awful as Saddam Hussein, but there are trading parties, which are our trading buddies, so we overlook their little excesses. And since the Red Chinese are our bankers, maybe you can understand why we have such an unlevel playing field in our trading relations. It is going to get worse in January when the final barriers fall on cheap Chinese clothing imports and another 600,000 Americans, mostly in the South, will see their manufacturing jobs go poof. And one of the best examples I found on the road of the South's peculiar detachment from economic reality was a lady named Barbara Turner. With her husband, she runs a delightful restaurant in Greenville, Georgia. And she recited the whole litany of economic woes in the South. Factory closings, lost jobs, no opportunities for kids. And she understood that the Bush administration has dug us into an economic hole that it may take generations to climb out of. But Turner, without hesitation, said, I have to stay with Bush. In her case, as with many Southerners, Mr. Suggs suspects that the reason is the religion thing. From one end of the South to the other, we encountered people distressed at the loss of jobs. Some understood that multinational companies were shipping jobs overseas, but few Southerners understood why we're so vulnerable. The answer is simple. We're fixated on the past. Much of our economy is rooted in methods and technologies of previous centuries. Yet when our antiquated factories and mills closed, we're left bleeding, as did Errol Henry's, a Democratic activist in Beaufort County, North Carolina, that the only issue was jobs, jobs, jobs. The obvious question is, what do we do? No one seems to have much of an answer on either side. Elevating the backward gazing to public policy, we have Southern governors falling over themselves to bribe companies to set up shops here. In recent days, Georgia officials were ready to stuff $17 million into Kmart's cash register, and the state toyed with sweetening that with another $13 million to get the retailer to move its corporate staff here. That's about $2 taken away from every man, woman, and kid in the state. It's called corporate welfare. What would Kmart do? It would fire about 2,000 workers in its current home state, Michigan, move a handful of top execs here, and hire maybe 1,500 people. Why? Because it would shed high-paying jobs in favor of dirt-cheap payrolls in Georgia. And the numbers suggest force people to work far longer hours so that corporate chieftains can collect bonuses for being efficient. Michigan will probably outbid on its taxpayers' dime Georgia. but the Kmart deal was small potatoes compared to, say, $71 million, or about $8.50 per person, that would be given to Toyo Tire to create a whopping 350 jobs. Then there was the thankfully failed scheme to give Daimler Chrysler $320 million, $38 per person in Georgia, including $9.4 million in cold cash just to make the auto giant's executives feel good. And what has been the experience with such corporate blackmail? The companies come, they stay long enough to exhaust the tax breaks and other incentives, and then go looking for another state or third world nation to rip off. And people wonder why we need global labor standards. Hell, we need national labor standards. The minimum wage is a joke. You know, they were talking about Kerry raising it to $7, and like, bullshit, raise it to 15 and raise it immediately. Because he wanted to raise it to 7 by like, 2007, 2008. So what the hell is that going to do? You know, when all these people talk about they hate inflation, they don't want inflation, what they mean is inflation of our salaries. Prices haven't gone down. Do you know why my dad can support a family of five on a $6.50 an hour salary? Was because bread was like 15 cents a loaf instead of $1.50, what we're paying now. Because milk was like a quarter a gallon instead of $2 a gallon. Gas was 36 cents a gallon instead of $2. You know? Rent's gone through the roof. Rent's the biggest one. I think we paid $80 a month for rent for our apartment in New York. It wasn't really rent control, but that was what was needed, you know? Now what? Paying $50 a month to rent? $80 a month to rent? Who the hell hears of that? No one pays that. Unless you live with your family and they're just taking some money for the sake of taking money. We rent, we've got basically two rooms and a hallway and a bathroom. You've got a kitchen, a bedroom, and a bathroom and a hallway. And we pay about after bills included, and about $525 a month, which isn't bad, grant you, but it's like five times more than what my dad was paying. So yeah, I'm making twice as much, but I'm paying five times more for rent than he did. More than five times, six times. It's a joke. It's a joke. And then Southerners keep voting up for these policies. And you keep wondering how much worse their life is going to get until they suddenly realize, hey, we're being ripped off. You talk about an ownership society. Yeah, you will be the one owned. You won't be owning anything. Where is money going to show up for you to buy stocks if you have to work for a living? Who sweeps the streets in an ownership society? That's what I want to know. Who sweeps the streets? That's a job that's got to be done. Somebody's got to do it. I don't see any libertarians signing up for it. I don't see any poor libertarians either. These things got to be done, and nobody really wants to do them. How do you get somebody to do that in an ownership society where you earn money from stocks? As if you can get that kind of money anyway. We're being ripped off, people. Southerners in particular, the red states, are being ripped off more than anything else. But I guess they're kind of used to it. They've been ripped off by Billy Graham and Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and Jimmy Swaggart and Robert Tilton. They've been ripped off by all these people. Faith healers, soothsayers, astrology people. Well, there's astrology nuts all over the place. When you believe in things that you don't understand, then you suffer, man. And that's the long and short of it. Anyway, that's going to do it for this show. I hope you enjoyed Alice's Restaurant. And thanks again to my friends at BuzzFlesh.com. And thanks to all my listeners, especially at RantRadio.com. And my listeners at White Rose Society. Thanks again to Ben Birch. And I hope he gets his stuff together shortly, because he's been having some trouble. But I'm with Ben. I'm with everybody. Until next time, everybody take care. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show saying goodbye. Bye.
Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.